Foiled by the latitude of the Shin Beth to force confessions, by the fear of Arabs to charge publicly that they have been tortured, by the reluctance of the courts to throw out confessions that are challenged, by the inability of many Arab families to afford defense lawyers, by the fact that laws on the West Bank and Gaza Strip are made by military decree with no legislative input. How common this callous and extreme cruelty may be is difficult to say, but from the reports of human rights agencies it is not, by any means, rare. Moreover, it has official sanction, since it furthers the government's policy of harassing and terrorizing the Arab population in the West Bank and Gaza, to the point where their lives become so intolerable that they will be forced to leave their homes and lands. Whether they are forced to leave or not, the well of fear and hatred between Israelis and Palestinians is bottomless. It is no exaggeration to say that more anger and bitterness have been engendered in Palestine in the past 40 years than the British in North Ireland were able to create in 400 years. Shipley summarizes his conclusions, which end on a note of hopelessness, that any reconciliation between the two peoples is possible. I found it less easy to draw the lines of cause and effect. It may be, as those involved think, that the racism, anti-Semitism, and class prejudice are just corollaries to the main proposition, appendages of attitude attached to the essential confrontation of two peoples over one tract of territory. But now, after decades, just as war and terrorism have evolved into origins themselves, so have prejudices and stereotypes worked their way so thoroughly into literature, education, history, language and social mores on both sides, that they seem to govern the conflict as much as they are created by it. Disease and symptoms intertwined, emphasis supplied, the horrifying details of the Tel Aviv incident, as well as Shipley's final conclusion, are quoted primarily to show that so-called peace plans that talk about autonomy for the Palestinians under Israeli rule, or suggesting a trial period, during which Israelis and Palestinians get to know each other better, are hoaxes. The problem is not that they don't know each other, but that they do know each other. Abba Eben has made a valiant effort to appeal to Israel's youth, without much impact. In an article appearing in the November 19, 1988, edition of the Jerusalem Post, entitled The Issues That Won't Go Away, he writes, "Likud representatives, especially the younger generation, will have to ask themselves whether they can serve the national and Jewish interests permanently if they make the territorial indivisibility of Eretz Israel a matter of rigid dogma against the historic and demographic realities, against the opinion of all mankind, and against at least half of the Israeli." Up to this point, we have focused our attention primarily upon Israel's internal problem and its relationship with the Palestinians in the West. In the balance of this chapter, we will discuss the international situation, the Arab nations and Israeli expansionism, much of the attitude of the Arab nations in the Middle East toward Israel is rooted in the Arab perception that Israel is a predatory power, continue ally seeking to expand its borders at the expense of the Arab countries. Our purpose here is to seek and determine whether this perception has any basis in fact, and what can be done to allay Arab fears. In this effort, we will discuss some of the reasons why Israel's Arab neighbors are fearful of. In chapter 3, we have traced the development of Zionism from Theodor Herzl's concept of a Jewish homeland, not necessarily in Palestine, up to the founding of the State of Israel in 1948. The following is a brief chronological summary of the important events leading up to the establishment of the Jewish state. Except where sources are otherwise indicated, all source references are found in chapter 3. It has been shown that following Herzl's death, the leaders of the Zionist movement, Ben-Gurion, Weizmann, and Jabotinsky, were united in one purpose only: the re-establishing of a Jewish state in all of Palestine. The Arab inhabitants were to be replaced or overwhelmed by Jewish immigration, and dealt with in a manner as to deprive them of any political rights. The first official endorsement of the concept of a Jewish homeland is found in the British government's famous Balfour Declaration made in 1917. This short note from Anthony Balfour, British Foreign Minister, to Lord Rothschild expressed sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of the existing non-Jewish communities. And the Zionists promptly seized upon the Balfour Declaration as justification for its intent to establish a completely Jewish state in Palestine. Among other claims, it announced that Palestine is to become as Jewish as England. This distortion of the intent and meaning of the Balfour Declaration caused the British to issue its white paper in the spring of 1939, in which it stated emphatically and unequivocally that the Balfour Declaration was not intended and could not be used by the Zionists to justify a Jewish national home in all of Palestine, or the subordination of the Arab population. The Zionists rejected the white paper and, in 1942, began an all-out terrorist campaign intended to drive the British out of Palestine. As we have seen, the terrorist campaign succeeded and caused the British to surrender its League of Nations mandate over Palestine to the newly created United Nations. After a lengthy study of the Palestine problem, the UN decided that the only possible solution was to partition Palestine into two independent sovereign states, one Jewish and one Palestinian. The Jewish state, with a population of 650,000, was allotted approximately 55% of the land, and the Palestinian state, with a population of 1,300,000, was allotted 45% of the land. The UN partition resolution enacted in 1947, to be effective in 1948, makes a specific point that the partition solves the Jewish-Palestinian problem, because the solution definitely fixes the extent of the territory to be allotted to the Jews. It goes further and says that the solution carries the sanction of the United Nations, which involves a finality which should allay Arab fears of further expansion of the Jewish state. At the time that the skeptical Palestinians were being told by the UN not to worry, since the boundaries of the Jewish state, which was being created, were fixed, the Zionists had no intention whatsoever of abiding by these fixed boundaries. To the Zionists, the Jewish state was only a first step, a springboard to the goal of taking over all of Palestine. Thus, the Zionist strategy never wavered from its basic position that all of Palestine was to be Jewish, and that no Palestinian state would be allowed, regardless of the UN partition resolution. On May 14, 1948, Ben-Gurion declared the establishment of the State of Israel. Immediately following this declaration, certain of the adjoining Arab states, but not the Palestinians, attacked Israel, which repelled the Arab attack, and, in the resulting War of Independence, the Israeli army overran large areas of land that had been allotted to the Palestinians under the UN partition plan. By means of military action, propaganda and another campaign of terrorism led by Menachem Begin and Yitzhak Shamir, 700,000 peaceful Palestinian inhabitants were driven from their homes and lands into refugee camps, where they and their descendants live to this day. Israel confiscated the Palestinian homes and lands and incorporated them into the State of Israel. The myth that the Palestinians would have had their Palestinian state had they not attacked Israel in 1948 has been exposed by Sima Flappen and other prominent Israeli historians as Israeli government propaganda. In Israel's Six-Day War in 1967 with Egypt, Jordan, and Syria, the Israelis achieved another quick victory, as a result of which they invaded and occupied the remaining land inhabited by the Palestinians on the West Bank and Gaza. They also invaded and occupied the Egyptian Sinai and the Syrian Golan Heights, as well as all of Jerusalem. Following the Six-Day War, the UN, in 1967, adopted Resolution 242, which requires Israel to return the occupied lands on the West Bank and Gaza to its Palestinian inhabitants. Israel accepted UN Resolution 242. In 1977, the newly elected Prime Minister of Israel, Menachem Begin, rejected UN Resolution 242 on the grounds that it does not apply to the West Bank and Gaza, because they are sacred lands given by God to Abraham, and are the property of the Jewish people. Israel thus has developed from the concept of a Jewish homeland to a military, including nuclear, power, technologically equal to any nation on earth, including the NATO countries and the Soviet Union. As might be expected, this inexorable expansion has been watched by the Arab countries with deepening anxiety. What the Arabs see is a relentless drive by Israel to invade and conquer the Arab lands from the Nile to the Euphrates, which includes Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq. This is the announced purpose of Israel's powerful Gush Emunah movement. After seeing their worst fears come to pass in the UN,